In the spring of 1942, the United States rounded up 120,000 residents of Japanese ancestry living along the West Coast and sent them to internment camps for the duration of World War II. Amazingly, the government hired famed photographers Dorothea Lange, Ansel Adams, and many others to document the expulsion, from assembling Japanese Americans at racetracks to confining them in 10 camps spread across the country. Authors Richard Cahan and Michael Williams, both noted photo historians, now take a slow, careful look at each of these images as they put together a powerful history of one of America's defining moments. The name of the new book is Un-American, The Incarceration of Japanese Americans During World War II, images by Dorothea Lange, Ansel Adams, and other government photographers. It is a great pleasure to welcome one of the co-authors, Richard Cahan, to the roundtable this morning. Richard, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe, very much.
What brought you to this project and wanting to talk about this dark time in American history?
Well, I'm a picture editor, which means that I work with photographers and pictures and collections of pictures and try to make sense of them and put them in context. And I was at the National Archives in College Park, Maryland, a place that I like to hang out. And I asked one of the archivists, what collection of photographs do you have that Americans should see? The National Archives, I don't know, you probably know that it's kind of the repository of all government records. And she took out, I think it was 20 small boxes of pictures, about 7,000 photographs of them, taken by photographers who were hired by the government, by the War Relocation Authority, to document the incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II. So, of course, that piqued my interest. Like most Americans, I know frightfully little about the internment, the incarceration, and so I've spent the last year or so figuring out what the pictures mean and understanding what happened to Japanese Americans exactly 75 years ago.
It is fascinating because these are government-ordered wartime photos. Even more fascinating is some of the names attached, and I'm curious as to how surprised you were to find out who had taken some of these photos.
Well, I was surprised that Dorothea Lange was really the lead photographer during the early years. She's an unlikely person to be hired by the government for this project. She had worked for the government during the 1930s, and she had produced a remarkable cache of photographs showing mostly migrants moving from the Midwest to California. Her favorite famous picture is the migrant mother. I'm sure your listeners are well aware of it, a woman in a shanty, and her children are surrounding this mother. And Dorothea Lange was known as a no-holds-barred documentarian, so it was surprising that the government hired her. We don't exactly know why they hired her, but I have a sense, a real feeling, that she was the person that initiated it. Everything was happening very fast, and she said, you're going to need a photographer to document this so that people in America and so people in the world have a record of what we're doing. And so I think she came at the opportune time and was the first hired.
Do you have a sense that she and many of the other photographers had a context and a great concern of what they were witnessing and what they were photographing?
Oh, I definitely think so. She only lasted on the job for about 3 or 4 months. She developed ulcers. She was very depressed about what she was seeing. In fact, her assistant talks about a day that she wouldn't even leave her hotel room because she had seen so much. Later, she dismissed the work, feeling that she had not done a good job. Dorothea Lange's work here, I've been a photo editor all my life, and I've never seen work like this. The poignancy of it, the comprehensiveness of it. She started before the roundup started, so she showed what life was like in Japanese-American communities. And then she was there the day that people signed up. They were told to register. And then she was there the day that the buses came, and they got on buses, and she followed them to the what was called assembly centers. They're really temporary detention centers. And then she followed them to the camps themselves. And it wasn't until years later, she died in 1965, that she returned to the National Archives to see what she had done, and she was surprised about the quality of the work. The other person I think is very surprising is there's a lot of photos by Ansel Adams, who we all know as a great landscape photographer. But he was not paid by the government, but he was authorized to go into one camp, Manzanar, in the middle of California, and he created a photographic record at the Library of Congress that's remarkable. It showed people proud and proud and dignified and determined to keep on through the duration of the war.
There is one I've marked a couple of these photos that I wanted to talk to you about. One is of soldiers guarding the wartime Civil Control Administration station on Bush Street in San Francisco. And this is where family members were assigned a number that was to be written on tags and then attached to the personal belongings. And it shows a soldier guarding that entrance with a very orderly line of extremely well-dressed but concerned-looking Americans. And then on the right hand of the photo are children who are obviously waiting for their parents and sort of the worry on their faces. It's a pretty extraordinary Dorothea Lange photograph.
It is. I think that people have to remember that nobody knew what was going to happen to these Japanese-American families. They didn't know whether they were being taken for the weekend or a month or a year or even forever. They generally lined up and went because they felt it was their responsibility to do just that. They felt it was their responsibility to listen to people in authority, and they thought that this was part of their contribution to the war effort. And that picture is particularly interesting because when I was in San Francisco last summer doing research, I found that little fenced enclosure. It's still there. And you start to realize that this is not ancient history. This happened 75 years ago, and many of the people in these photographs are still alive, and we had a chance to contact many of them so they could tell their stories. And so the whole story of the incarceration is incredibly relevant today.
That is fascinating, and I do want you to talk a little bit about that aspect of the project, of talking to some of these people involved. How aware were they that they were even photographed and that this account existed?
Well, I think it runs the gamut. We have about 170 photographs in the book, and 30 of the photographs, I would say, are portraits of individuals or families. So we set up a list of the 30 people we wanted to contact. And we were surprised. It was a miracle. We actually talked to 25 of them. There's only five that are still missing. Many of the people had no idea that they were photographed. They were photographed in the midst of trauma, and they were photographed 75 years ago. And they were interested. You know, they were fascinated that they or their grandparents were in the pictures. And then there were people that remembered the day that Dorothea Lange came. There's a woman by the name of Jeanette Misaka. I think her picture is one of the first in the book, and she remembers the day Dorothea Lange arrived, and she was holding her little one-year-old sister by the name of Elaine, and she remembers that picture because her family couldn't find her baby's shoes, and her father was very upset that the family would look like a hick farming family. And so I looked at the picture closely, and there's the little girl without her shoes. So the people that I talked to really gave these pictures kind of a three-dimensionality, telling what happened before the picture was taken, what happened at that moment, and what happened to them in their lives since then.
One of the things, going back to Dorothea Lange for a moment, there is a portion of the book with portraits taken in Owens Valley, California, on July 3rd, 1942. And these are one-on-one, they're just individual portraits of individuals. What was the purpose of taking those photographs? What was she ultimately thinking they would be used for?
You know, that's a great question. Her notes from these years are at the University of California, and I've looked through them, and there's lots of notes about lots of pictures in the book. But this is kind of a mystery because Lange didn't usually take portraits like this. These people are, there's no background. It almost looks like a studio portrait. But ironically, she started her career as a studio photographer of the upper class in San Francisco. So I think it was kind of a return to her roots. And I think this was the last day she was shooting. I think it was in early June of 1942. And I think she just wanted to make a record of that these were regular human beings. But it is a, it's a kind of a stark, beautiful picture, a series of pictures of people during, you know, at the camp.
There are very few photographs, at least that I see or quite remember that most of Ansel Adams' photos were of signs, of objects, very few individuals.
Well, it's the book actually starts with a series of 8 photographs, and they're all by Ansel Adams, and they kind of sneak by you. Those are the first 8 pictures in the book, and the book starts with a quote by Lawson Inada, who was the poet laureate in Oregon, and he was a survivor of the camps. And the book starts with this quote that says, "Only what we could carry was the rule, so we carried strength, dignity, and soul." And then you turn the page, and you see these absolutely heroic pictures of children and farmers, people in the camps, and nurses and soldiers. And so you realize the extent of who was taken. You know, remember, there were 70,000 of the 110,000 people that were picked up were U.S. citizens. They were people that were Japanese Americans, but they were born in the United States. And for many years, we called this the internment. But you can't intern U.S. citizens, so even that word is something of a lie. You can incarcerate them, you can imprison them, and this was really the story of taking regular U.S. citizens and separating them from the rest of the U.S. population.
Talk a little bit about what you took away from the story and looking at these photos. I mean, we've been talking a lot about the photography and the photographers as well as the people who were documented, but of the takeaway of where we are 75 years later and how we got to that point 75 years ago.
Oh, thank you for asking that, because these pictures really both reverberate from the past and they're very important for present times. I think ultimately what I took away, there's a couple things. One is that hysteria makes us make bad decisions, irrational decisions, this fear of the other, this idea that America needs ultimate or total safety. And we've got to remember that we have to remember who our enemy is. In World War II, it wasn't the Germans or the Italians or the Japanese living in the country, but it was the governments of Japan and Germany and Italy. And sometimes we think that because someone came from Japan that they're our enemies. It's just not the truth. And I think the other really important issue that connects to today is that by hiring these photographers, the government really took control of the story. They could tell newspapers and other photojournalists that there was no need to go into the camps, that they had their own photographers, and if you needed a picture, they could provide a picture. And I think it harkens back to the importance of the free press. Now, it turns out that these photographs ended up being pretty powerful. But the government controlled those pictures, and they impounded Dorothea Lange's pictures at first, and nobody saw them. So now they have great power because the war is long over, and they're in these, you know, archives at the National Archives. But it's important that we keep remembering the importance of a free press and access to things like this.
The book is truly stunning. It is un-American, the incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II. Michael Williams and Richard Cahan are the authors. Richard, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program, and best of luck with this project.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Un-American, The Incarceration of Japanese Americans During World War II. The book is published by City Files Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.